I'm Matt Bush with BPR News. I'm speaking with Dr. Chris Cooper of Western Carolina University. Chris, as always, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, great to be here, Matt.
Bernie Sanders was in Nashville last week, the first of what we are expecting to be many presidential candidates, particularly Democratic presidential candidates, since there are now 23 of them running, to visit Asheville and Western North Carolina. First, that Bernie was the first one here. Why is that not surprising?
You know, I think Bernie did really well, not just in Asheville, but in Western North Carolina in general. So if you sort of stack up the regions of North Carolina, the one Bernie performed the best in 2016 was Western North Carolina. So even these far west counties you might not think of as Bernie strongholds within the Democratic Party kind of are Bernie strongholds.
Any particular reason why he resonated with everybody here as opposed to the rest of the state?
You know, I mean, I think Trump also did better in the West than any other region. So I think what you're seeing is these kind of anti-establishment, anti-Washington, at least projecting candidates, right? And so I would say Bernie and Trump both were those. And I also think you see a little bit of a fairly conservative region, and so you're going to see this kind of backlash against it from the Democratic Party.
So now looking forward, as the primary is in March in North Carolina, we'll get to that in a second, it is earlier, but from now until March, how many more of these people are we going to expect to see coming through our neck of the woods?
Well, let's see. We got 23 candidates. We've knocked off one, so I'd say probably about 22 more. I think we're going to see a whole lot of them, right? I think we're on the road to South Carolina. We know South Carolina is going to get everybody. Greenville's going to get almost everybody. And I think a lot of those folks are going to come up north to North Carolina.
Now that North Carolina is in March earlier, it's also going to be one of the battleground states of 2020 as it becomes just more increasingly a purple state because of people who have moved here. Mm-hmm. What impact is having an earlier primary going to be in North Carolina, again, really with the Democratic primary, with so many candidates running, with it being competitive, what impact is the earlier primary going to have?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really important, right? So we have what's called a sequential primary, right? Meaning that states go in order. Well, obviously, we don't have one big primary day in the United States. So that means the earlier you are, the greater your probability of helping kind of winnow out the candidates. So we know that Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and to some degree Nevada kind of play that role early. Moving North Carolina earlier is going to make us more important. It's going to get us more visits. It's going to get us more money spent. It's going to make us more influential in the long run.
Now, you mentioned that Asheville is in Western North Carolina, actually a part of the Greenville-Spartanburg media market. Mm-hmm. What impact does that have on how many people are going to visit here and how many people are going to advertise here come March of next year?
Yeah, I think it's going to, obviously, we're going to have a lot of spillover, right? So Western North Carolina is an interesting place. We get a lot of Greenville-Spartanburg. We get a little bit of Chattanooga media. We get a little bit of Atlanta media and obviously some of our own here in Asheville. And so I think as folks are advertising in South Carolina, we're going to see spillover into Western North Carolina. Those borders, as we all know here, are permeable in some ways, meaning that obviously airwaves cross those borders. So we're going to see more visits. We're going to see more ads.
In the overall statewide count, what role will Western North Carolina play in that?
You know, fairly small. Kind of statewide, you've got to figure that we aren't as populous as some other regions of our state. So it would make sense that more folks are going to visit Charlotte. More folks are going to, of course, visit Raleigh. When they come to Western North Carolina, they're going to come to Asheville. I think most of them will end up in this area. But we're not going to get quite the quantity of coverage and attention that more populous parts of the state are.
And is there a candidate right now? We know who the front runners are, but is there a candidate you think would do well in North Carolina in March? Of course, this is, you know, 10 months away, so who knows what's going to happen between now and then. But which of the ones running right now might do well?
You know, it's a little bit hard to say. I think Kamala Harris has some good potential in North Carolina. I think if sort of getting out of Western North Carolina, looking at the more diverse parts of the state, I think she's the kind of candidate that could do fairly well here. But with this many candidates, it's really hard to know, right? So Biden and Sanders, of course, are polling very, very well right now, but those tend to be the names people know. So I think what you want to look for are the people whose names aren't as well known, but are still polling in the high single digits. So I think your people like Kamala Harris to some degree, perhaps Beto, a few of those folks that are in the 6, 7, 8 percentage points might be people we could look forward to in the primary.
Shifting to state politics coming out of Raleigh, crossover day in the General Assembly was earlier this month. Just let's explain that first. Mm-hmm. Bills have to pass through one chamber to have a good chance mm-hmm. of being considered for the rest of the General Assembly session through the end of next year. But there are exceptions. Just explain a little bit what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have this thing called crossover day. People look look forward to it. It's a big day. So essentially the idea is something hasn't left the House and passed the House yet to get to the Senate. It's unlikely to do so. From the Senate to the House, same thing. The two big exceptions to that are, one, budget bills. So anything that has money attached to it, you can bring up much later in the session and still get out after crossover day. Also, bills related to election laws. So those can also be produced later. So when we look at your kind of standard non-budgetary bills, they need to have cleared at least one House at this point.
Of the measures that have gone through at least one chamber so far, mm-hmm. are there any surprises? What did you see that came out within the first few months here that made it through crossover day? Surprises or non-surprises?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton, right? So we didn't see a lot of bills die that we wouldn't have expected to die. Obviously, this is a budget year. This is our long session year. And so what that means is they are producing a new budget. That's the biggest thing to watch. So we got a budget that came out of the House. The Senate's kind of wrestling with it now. That's going to go to the governor. It will almost certainly be vetoed. So I think that's one thing to watch out for. Other things that have made it out of one chamber, we got a lot of these symbolic bills. So we've got the Moravian cookie bill that says that the official cookie of North Carolina will be the Moravian cookie. This was evidently suggested by a group of students in Greensboro, and that's been a bipartisan bill. We've got a bill allowing dogs in breweries again. So for those of you who have been wanting to see a dog next to your brew tank at your local brewery, that may once again happen. But we've seen a lot of those kinds of bills, not a lot of really substantive stuff.
And we'll toss a few in here from our neck of the woods. Haywood County would become the elk capital of North Carolina, mm-hmm. undoubtedly a nod to the elk that are out at Cunnolufty, I'm sure.
That's right.
And the other would make the towns of Brevard and Rossman and Transylvania County the official land of waterfalls in North Carolina. A lot of the other ones that were here, there were even more, did not pass.
Yeah.
Those are always interesting things, these symbolic stuff, because any state legislature always puts these in there. And they kind of reveal some things about the state and sort of the people in it, don't they?
They do. And it's actually worth reading the bills. And so, like, for example, the elk one, if you go into it and you say, well, why on earth should Haywood County be the elk capital of our state? I mean, they sort of lay out the logic at the sort of the front end, the kind of preambulatory language of these bills. What tends to happen in North Carolina is that a lot of these get out of the House, and because the Senate tends to have larger constituencies, they may get kind of more battles, and so a lot of them tend to die in the Senate. But I think they are interesting, and they sort of, I don't know, kind of give a little bit of flavor to kind of home constituencies and to how our state varies within itself.
A few other things that we found as this session has gone by is we're going to have some new lawmakers from our area in 2021. Democrat Terry Van Dyne, state senator from Buncombe County, she's running for lieutenant governor. Her seat's going to open up then, and we can expect a lot of Democrats to look to get that seat, correct?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, she's definitely been clear about this and been clear early. So I think what we're seeing now is this kind of winnowing process where people are kind of floating their names slowly to get out there. But yeah, that's going to be a very important seat moving forward. Seems likely to be a Democratic seat.
Two seats currently held by Republicans are in the State House, both Chuck McGrady and Cody Henson. Chuck McGrady representing Henderson County, Cody Henson representing Polk, Transylvania, and Henderson County. They're both not running for re-election. What could we look for there?
You know, I think those are likely to be Republican-leaning seats. Just to sort of take the McGrady one for a second, I mean, Chuck McGrady has kind of been one of the last real voices for bipartisanship, and not just on issues like the cookie bill, but on, you know, really substantive issues facing the region. So here's been a Republican who has made his name a little bit on redistricting reform, a little bit on kind of environmental reform. And so I think we're probably going to see a different kind of Republican come out of that district.
Right, both these seats deal with Henderson County, which is the second most populous jurisdiction in western North Carolina. It's also, those would then make it the largest Republican stronghold. And there's a lot of political jockeying and I think just a lot of political divisiveness that's sort of brewing in that county, for lack of a better term. So what might that mean for these two seats in 2021, and who might be representing them if there is this growing sort of divisiveness in the politics in that county?
Yeah, I think there is. I think there is across the country, and I think particularly in that county, I think there's a lot of divisiveness. We know, kind of if you look nationally, that when we see polarization increase, right, the idea that Republicans are more extreme on one side, Democrats are more extreme on the other, that doesn't tend to be because a certain legislator tends to move in their time in office. We see that polarization happen with replacement. In other words, when somebody retires or is kicked out of office, somebody else coming in. And so I think that's what we're likely to see here, unfortunately, is kind of increased polarization. We'll see, but the constituency would lead us to believe so. Past history would lead us to believe so.
Lastly, best political show on television now that one of our favorites, yes. Veep, ended so gloriously.
Yes.
What's next?
What's next? I don't know. You know, it's hard to find a great political show with the demise of Veep. I was we were joking that you know, one of my favorite things with Veep was he never knew which party Selena Meyer was a member of, and now we've learned that because the convention that she was attending was in Charlotte, turns out Selena Meyer must have been a Republican. So who knew? That's been the big TV challenge for me. There's not too much left. That's fun on TV about politics.
And that was the thing about Veep was that made it so great that it was completely nonpartisan.
Yes.
It was really about other things and how much of it also became true.
Yeah, the degree to which it became true was perhaps a little startling, but it was fun. It was used politics, but it wasn't really. You didn't have to be a Democrat or Republican to like it. If you just paid enough attention to politics to follow the absurdity, it was a lot to love in Veep. And I have not found much to replace it.
No, I haven't either. So, well, Chris, as always, thank you for coming in today.
Yeah, great to be here, Matt.